We are quite a collection, all of us, we men and women, and we older and younger, we kids and aged. All of us make up the human race, and we're quite a collection. Some people say we're very complicated. Others say that we're really pretty simple to figure out. Well, I don't know that we're all really simple to figure out, but there are some things about us that are really remarkable, and I would like to talk to you about some of those things today. There's so much to be negative about in this old world. There's no good today to go there. I don't mean to do that at all, because you just turn on your news and read newspapers, and you get about all of that that you want. And we do need that occasionally, just as a reminder that the end time is fast approaching. But today I'd like to take you on a discovery. I call this sermon A Sense of Discovery. I want you to think about yourself, and I want you to think about Jesus Christ and what he may or may not feel or think or see in you. It's a little bit of a process of discovery, and I hope you like taking the journey, and I hope you like what you will discover about yourself. But to take us there, I would like to open with a little excerpt from a book which was written by a Chinese lady. The title of the book was Life and Death in Shanghai. In her book, and this is sort of, it's a very brutal type of exposition, it is a rehearsal of the strength and stamina it took for her to survive this captivity in a Chinese prison. And she was a prisoner as a result of the Chinese Cultural Revolution. In chapter after chapter of her book, she describes the brutality of those that had control over her. They tried to break her will, and they tried to force her to confess to a conspiracy that she had absolutely nothing to do with. She did not break. She remained firm. She decided not to let them get the best of her. And so day after day, even almost hour by hour, she confirmed her innocence. This woman, this remarkable woman, was a widow, and she had been separated from her only child, a daughter. And she learned later on, unfortunately and sadly enough, that her daughter had died. She had to grapple with things that you and I only read about, see on TV, or maybe explore in the chapters of a novel, or maybe in real-life books. She did not have what we would call a godlike faith, but she did have a real-world kind of faith because she lived in real-world kind of experiences. She did not have the resources to rely upon that you and I do. Now, by that I mean we have our faith. We have Jesus Christ. We have the Father. We have our knowledge and the truth that we understand to fall back upon. But to help us proceed on this discovery, this journey of discovery, this sense of discovery, I'd like you to listen to something that seems to be so simple that gave her the strength to carry on. And in doing this, we see an element of human excellence that all of us have. We just need to discover it. And sometimes the way in which we live in this old world, with all of our problems and all the things we have to get caught up in, we fail to see those little surprises in each one of us that are remarkable. And they are unique to every one of us if we will just stretch the envelope occasionally. And yet I'm not even sure that it takes that, but I do know that when we do that, and we ascend to a level of excellence that we're not normally accustomed to, it's rather astounding what can be discovered. Here's what she wrote about, and I'm going to read a portion of this from her book. At a key moment in her incarceration and being held in prison, here's what she wrote, and she was observing, I'll get this, a tiny little spider. Now, all the ladies just went, ooh. But she was observing this tiny little spider. She related that it was no larger than a little pea, so pretty small. And she observed it crawling up the side of the windowsill. When it had climbed to the top, she wrote, it began the intricate process of spinning a web. All of us have seen that many times, I'm sure. She says it swung out and it descended in a very thin silken thread that was spun from the end of its body. She says, with a leap and a swing, it secured the end of the thread to another bar. This process, she wrote, happened over and over again until there was a frame upon which to build a web. She says there was absolutely no hesitation, no mistake, no haste. This little creature knew its job and was carrying it out with complete confidence. When the spider's task was complete, she said, I like this, she said it went to its center and settled in. Went to its center and settled in. There might be a little lesson in there if we think about that. Sometimes we deal with peripheral issues way too much and we need to be right in the very center of what life is about. But that's not what I want to continue with. Now, what did this mean to her? Probably nothing that it means to you. Or maybe it does. Let's find out. She suggested the following. She said, I had just watched an architectural feat by an extremely skilled artist. And she said her mind was full of questions. She asked, who taught this spider to make a web? I think you know the answer to that, don't you? She said, could it really have acquired the skill through evolution, or did God create the spider and endow it with the ability to make a web so that it could catch food and perpetuate its species? She asked that question. Then she concluded, for the moment, I knew I had just witnessed something that was extraordinarily beautiful and uplifting. Whether God had made the spider or not, notice what she did, I thanked him for what I had just seen. A miracle of life had been shown to me. It helped me to see that God was in control. And then she talks about the fact that her revolutionaries, her captors, seemed to be much less menacing. And she felt a great hope and renewal and confidence. Well, what do you think? Several things in that little story caught my attention. First of all, what she witnessed in this little simple, natural, everyday occurrence was beautiful and uplifting. It dawns on me that many events like that take place every single day if we'll just take the moment in our freedom to see them. And not to see them just in other people, but maybe to see them in ourselves. Now, I'm going to ask you then, as we consider and go along here today, those moments in your life when you stretch the envelope in this amazing sense of discovery that you can find about yourself, and certainly more important to me, it's what God observes. Let me ask you this. Do you think that God is ever surprised? What do you think? Think about that for just a moment. You think that God, Jesus Christ I'm talking about, is ever surprised? Maybe that's too strong a word. Maybe the word should be, do you think he's ever astonished? Now everybody said, now that's a word that's in the Bible. Now maybe he is astonished. How about this? Do you think God ever stands back and sort of says, and wonders in amazement at what one of you does? What do you think about that? Oh, not me. I don't ever do anything that would make God notice me. Well, I'd like to talk about that for a moment, because I'm going to give you four examples, and I won't spend a great deal of time with them, but I'm going to give you four examples that I think show that God is rather, by that I mean Jesus Christ, is rather surprised at what we can do when we retreat to those elements that are really truly beautiful and uplifting in this life. Yep, God, that's right. I'm looking at all of you, and I can say, now, wait a minute now. That means today, I even thought about Darren, for example, up here leading songs. Not too long ago, Darren wasn't leading songs. Now he is leading songs. He's making a contribution to church, and as you observe today, he's doing a pretty good job. And I was thinking about that. Well, he surprised me. I wonder if he surprised anybody else whose presence is involved in this church service every single week. You think God looked at Darren, and for weeks and weeks and years probably, Darren hasn't even thought about getting up here leading songs, and all of a sudden, bingo, probably Bronson twisted his arm to get him up here, and Darren walks up here, and he surprised all of us, and I wonder if he surprised God. Well, Darren will have to evaluate that. With surprises comes appreciation and approval. I could ask, do you think that God approved of what Darren did? Well, I think so. Was it pleasing? Well, sure. Makes a difference. Makes a contribution. Just some little thing like that. Look what it did to our church service. So I digress to mention that for just a moment, because sometimes we look way beyond what's really close by. This past week, actually it's been the last couple of weeks, there have been a couple of remarkable things that I wanted to just mention to you to see if you think it's rather astonishing, if not surprising, and what the humankind will do that stretches the envelope of what God created us to do. Let me begin with my first illustration. Do you remember the story that I think I mentioned to you briefly from the pulpit, but it's been in the news, of this lady? I confess, I didn't remember where she was from. It was Mozambique or some South African community or nation where they were ravaged by floods. Do you remember that? And the woman, her community was completely awash. There were outrageous floods. The animals were dying. There was disease. And she, of all things, retreated to the top of a tree where she was 9 months pregnant, and she had her little baby. I think it was a little girl, if I'm not mistaken. Is that right, or a little boy? I've forgotten now. I saw a picture of the two of them the other day, and I thought, well, boy, they sure look well. But back to the story, because this is what caught my attention. And Betsy and I were having a conversation about this, and I'm going to tell you something. Betsy surprised me just out of the clear blue sky, and I'm going to tell you what she surprised me by saying. But here's the story. The lady was up there, 9 months pregnant, and all of a sudden it's time. It's time to have the baby. And so she had the presence of mind, apparently, to take some kind of a garment or a blanket of some type. And I don't want to be too graphic about this, but all of you mothers, you know what we're talking about. It's not the most comfortable of environments to have a child, much less in a tree about 30 feet up above a ravaging ocean of water with bloated animals and horses and cows and deer and flies and all that down below. But enough of that. So she straps this little blanket underneath her to catch the baby. She births the baby. The baby falls into this blanket. Now, when Betsy and I were talking about that, I said to Betsy one thing to the other. I said, well, boy, just an incredibly remarkable event. And the child was born, and I said, well, I wonder what would have happened, what would the mother have done if it hadn't have caught there and the baby had plummeted into the water. And this is what surprised me. Betsy said, well, the mother would just jump in after her. That didn't even cross my mind. Now, I'm confessing, that one didn't cross my mind. I guess it's because I've never had a baby like that. Now, what about you mothers? Would you all just sort of agree with that? I mean, Betsy didn't even think 1 minute about it. She just said, well, I would just jump in, she says, because I wouldn't want to be alive without my baby. And I thought, well, that's rather surprising. That's remarkable. Well, you know the story. Didn't need to. The baby was born and everything seems to be okay. Now, I got to thinking about that story and I thought, boy, she described this, wasn't it described as a noisy angel that came out of heaven that rescued her, because she had never seen a helicopter. And all of a sudden, here comes this noisy mechanism, which she thought was like an angel coming out of heaven to rescue her and that little baby. And I thought, well, that's sort of interesting. Now, she later said she had never ridden in a helicopter, never seen one. At the time, she thought it was something rather miraculous. And the whole experience shows what human beings are capable of doing, you know. And yet, what caught me most by surprise about this was my wife's answer to what would have happened, what would she have done if the baby, the little baby had, which it didn't, had fallen into the water. Betsy said, without even thinking, just jump in and go get it, with no consideration for your own life. And I thought about that, and I thought, that's probably the way mothers think, don't you think? Boy, that's a remarkable quality. That is a remarkable quality. And we see it constantly, and it's something that mothers do live by. They give up everything for their children. They will deny themselves food and shelter and clothing to take care of their children. So I got to thinking about that little example, which sort of pushed the perception of human excellence and what people will do and what people can do. Now, I don't know that God was surprised by that, but He made that woman the way she was, and He has made us rather remarkably and very much the same way, except most of us never push the envelope. We just don't. Maybe it's because we don't think we are capable of accomplishing the things that God created us to accomplish. I was also struck by one other example quickly before going on to the four examples I want to share with you. And that was the example of the teacher, what was it, Pittsburgh or somewhere over to the east, who had the student in her class who needed a kidney. And she, without thinking, just said, well, I'll give him one of mine. Complete stranger, except it was a student in her class. She knew about his needs. And so she took the time to go down, have her blood tested. She had the same blood type, and they matched up. And she went in, had the operation, had one of her kidneys removed, put into the young man. And the last report I saw that was brought out in the news article, the news presentation, is he was doing fine. He just had to take a lot of medicine to fight the rejection of the organ from his body until enough time goes by. But he was out having a lot of fun and a big smile on his face, and he was so thankful to this marvelous woman who had sacrificed her own organ to give to him. That's sort of surprising, isn't it? Does that surprise you at all? Not too many of us would even think to do that kind of thing. And I got to thinking about, I wonder if that surprised her family. Probably did. You think it surprised God? Well, God, I don't know what his reaction would have been, but he might have said, well, boy, it's amazing what my humankind will do. It's really rather remarkable. Wonder why more people don't do that. They've all got the same capacity. They've all got that ability. But how come it's only the few we hear about and not the many? Well, maybe because we don't understand this remarkable sense of discovery available to every one of us. We'll just take time to look. Now, let's go along. I'd like quickly to go to four examples in the Scripture. I might tell you before we go through these that three of these you're going to recognize by name. The fourth, I think you're going to recognize it, but you'll have to put the name to it. The first I'd like you to notice is over in Mark chapter 7. In Mark chapter 7. And what I'm after as we go through here, I want you to consider whether or not God, Jesus Christ, if you will, might have been a little bit surprised by what happened. The first involves this lady. Mark chapter 7 and verse 24. If you will notice there, verse 24. I'm breaking into the chapter, and I want to read this to you, and here it is applying to a mother. And I guess those mothers, that God created them a certain way, and here's a mother who's very concerned about her daughter. Not too unusual. And from thence he arose, verse 24, and went into the borders of Tyre and Sidon, which is over near Lebanon, current day Lebanon today. And he entered into a house and would have no man to know it because he wanted to be hid, but he couldn't be hidden. And probably what this was all about is real simple. Jesus had been on quite a journey. He'd been involved in a lot of witnessing, and he was tired. He wanted to have a little bit of rest, but it wasn't to be. Because, verse 25, a certain woman whose young daughter had an unclean spirit, she had an evil spirit about her, heard of him and came and fell at her feet. Now, it tells us a little bit about this woman. This woman was not one of the chosen children. Put that in quotes. She was a Syrophoenician. She was a Gentile. Even so, it says that she besought him that he would cast forth the devil out of her daughter. Let's think about that for a moment. All of you mothers in the audience today, what degree of understanding or compassion is relevant here? Do you feel the same about your own children? To what ends would you go to save your daughter's life? Or your, let's put the boys in on this too, you know. To what end would you go to save your son's life? Well, the old saying goes, probably to the end of the earth. But here we see this example of a mother who, I suspect, and this is what's interesting to me about this, I suspect she didn't know all the truth. What do you think? I don't think she did. But she had heard that this man had the gift of healing. And that was enough for her because nothing else was working and she needed some help for her daughter. So she went there, she laid herself down at his feet and she besought him that he would cast forth the devil out of her daughter. But notice what Jesus says in verse 27. Jesus said to her, well, let the children, and this is a reference to the children of Israel, if you will, because there's a little bit of an analogy here. So he says, let the children first be filled, for it is not meet to take the children's bread and to cast it unto the dogs. Now what this talks about is a comparison between the Jews and the Gentiles, between those of Israel and those of those Gentile nations. And Jesus, because the commission was to go to the children of Israel, This reference is made to they need to be fed first, let's put it that way. But she was so astute and so sharp and so involved and so intent on seeking a blessing for her daughter that she responded, well, yes, Lord. And that's interesting, too. In the entire book of Mark, this is the only place here where Mark calls Jesus Lord. And this is symbolic, then, of her perception of who she was talking to. She was submitting herself to him. Now, one other thing about this reference in verse 27 to the children and the dogs, it's really puppies. And they translated it dogs. It's no great big thing, but I think there's a little bit of a different feeling with puppies, because puppies are what? They need food to grow. You know, a dog, sure, it needs the food to stay alive, but they're, you know, all of us know what the difference between a puppy and a dog is. But here, Jesus said, well, if let the children first be filled, for it is not meet to take the children's bread and cast it unto the puppies. And then she goes on and she says, but yes, Lord, yet the dogs, or the puppies, under the table, eat of the children's crumbs. What a remarkable statement for that woman to make. And it was made based upon the fact that she needed him to do something for her, because nobody else could do it. And then he said to her, for this saying, go your way, the devil is gone out of your daughter. And when she was come to her house, she found the devil gone out and her daughter laid upon the bed. I am submitting to you, if you will, that this caught Jesus a little bit by surprise. What do you think? The reason why I bring that out is because he had not met such tenacity up to this point. And this moment, this woman had this ability within her to be so tenacious and so demanding and so expectant. And she wouldn't give up no matter what the cost. And she went and she implored the Savior of mankind with such wisdom. And I think if you see what's really said here, that Jesus was caught a little bit by astonishment. A sense of discovery about this woman that came before him. Because let's be honest about it, probably hundreds and hundreds of other men and women had come up to him, but for some reason this one is recorded in the Scripture, and this one is very much unlike any other that's recorded. Well, she sort of expanded the envelope of possibilities, and she believed tenaciously. Now, let's consider another one that you're familiar with. It's the Roman centurion. It's over in Matthew chapter 8. Turn there with me. Matthew chapter 8 and verse 5. This also is a remarkable account of a man who believed in authority. And there's something else, if you read through this, that you may overlook, and yet I'll bring it to your attention, that's rather remarkable too. Verse 5, and when Jesus was entered into Capernaum, this is over in Matthew chapter 8, there came unto him a centurion, beseeching him, and says, Lord, my servant is at home, sick of the palsy. And all of us know what that is. Grievously tormented. And Jesus said to him, I will come and heal him. Now we have this exchange. The centurion answered and said, Lord, I am not worthy that you should come into my roof, but speak the word only, and my servant shall be healed. Now I'm going to stop just there and ask you to think about something. Because in thinking about all the healings that had taken place up to this point, I believe that this is the very first one where a healing is going to take place at a distance. This is not one where Jesus goes and... See, he said, I will go and lay hands. I will come and heal him. But the centurion says, no, you don't need to do that. All you have to do, all you have to say is just give your word and it will be done. I think that surprised Jesus a little bit. Because remember, he already said, I'll go over there and do it. And notice if we follow along, he said... This is the centurion speaking. I'm not worthy that you should speak or should come under my roof, but speak the word only, and my servant shall be healed. He says, I am a man under authority, having soldiers under me. And I say to this man, will go, and he goes, and to another, come, and he comes, and to my servant, do this, and he does that. When Jesus heard it, it says he what? He did what? He marveled. I think he was astonished by that a little bit. It caught him off guard. He had never run into that before. Not with this humankind. And yet for some reason, this centurion, this man of authority, was able to surprise Jesus. He was able to sort of see through this quote-unquote secret of Jesus' authority. And this man believed that Jesus' word was sufficient to heal his servant. And up to this point, there's no record that a distance healing was done before. There's one other one over in the book of John that's a possibility, but let's not argue the point. In the main, this is early on that Jesus did something like that. I think that's pretty remarkable, don't you? Well, why didn't other people do it? You know, just come up and say, well, all you have to do is say the word. You don't have to be there to touch me. No, it says that Jesus marveled and said to him that followed, said to them that followed, verily I say unto you, I have not found so great faith, no, not in all of Israel. So that was a remarkable event. This man stood above all the others. He goes on to say, and I say unto you that many, this refers to the Gentiles, shall come from the east and the west, and shall sit down with Abraham and Isaac and Jacob in the kingdom of heaven. But the children of the kingdom, referring to his own nation, the Jews, shall be cast out into outer darkness. There shall be weeping and gnashing of teeth. And Jesus said unto the centurion, go your way, and as you have believed, so be it done unto you. And his servant was healed in that very same hour. Just the word. Boy, what an example. What a remarkable example. It's amazing what we can discover when we look at this human potential that we have. We just don't exercise it. The third is a woman who had been ill for quite a long time. I think you're familiar with the example. It's over in Luke chapter 8. We'll go back there in Luke chapter 8 and verse 43. This is the woman who had been ill for 12 years, and she had had no one, not even the physicians, able to help her. And she mustered up all of her courage to go and to see Jesus. And she crept up behind him in verse 44 of Luke chapter 8. And because of the nature of her illness and her sickness, she was probably a little bit embarrassed, maybe ashamed. I don't want to read too much into that. But it was so important to her. And what I've always wondered about this, why was it just enough to touch his garment? Just to reach up, he won't know, just reach up and touch his garment. That'll be enough. I have to wonder about her past training and what she was thinking. Was there something to do with magic, you know, because these people didn't understand the truth of God? What was going on in her mind? Whatever it was, it led her to do something that apparently had not been done in such a way before. She reached out and she touched his garment. Surprise. What a remarkable thing takes place. It says here, as we continue on, she touched the border of his garment, and immediately her issue of blood staunched. It stopped. And Jesus said, who touched me? And the thing that's interesting about that is, you know, and you've heard it expounded, probably lots of people were touching him, but this was unique. In the experience of all of us human beings, something was going on here that was not common to everybody else, but was unique to this lady. There was something that Jesus discovered about her. It says here, Jesus said, who touched me? When all denied Peter and they that were with him said, well, Master, the multitude is pressing against you. What do you mean, who touched me? And Jesus said, somebody has touched me, for I perceive that virtue has gone out of me. And when the woman saw that she was not hidden any longer, she came trembling and shaking and quivering, like any of us might do, and falling down before him, she declared unto him before all the people for what cause she had touched him and how she was immediately healed. And he said to her, daughter, be of good comfort. Your faith has made you whole, and you go in peace. Now, the reason why I bring these three examples out before I come to the fourth is because as I look at these, I see exceptions to what we call the rule. I see elements of tenacity and faith and believing, and I must have it. And yet all of us have that same ability. Just discover it in yourselves. I was thinking about our church. You think about it all the time, and I do as well. There are some remarkable things about our people and our church that I'm sure pleases God. Maybe even occasionally surprise Him. I was thinking about a group of people. I'll take it away from our congregation here, but last week I had the privilege with Mr. Sharp to be up in Fayetteville, Arkansas. And while we were up there, a very nice group of people, a large 65 so people showed up for church services, and I thought to myself, where did all these people come from? And it dawned on me that they had driven, some of them, so far to come in fellowship with people of like mind at cost, great cost. You know how expensive gasoline is right now. I was a little bit surprised. And I thought, wonder if God surprised. Wonder if any of those folks today got up and surprised the Creator and said, well, you know, the easiest thing for me to do is just sort of stay home because, goodness sake, that's such a long drive over there and I'm not important anyway and I'm just a sinner. We can come up with all those kinds of reasons. But then all of a sudden, knowing that they were intent to think that way, they said, nope, I'm going to go. Well, that's a surprise, isn't it? And a sense of discovery. And I couldn't help but think about that as we fellowship with all those people up in that part of the country last week. And hello to all of you who are listening here on the tape. But it's true of our congregation here today as well. The people who care enough to go on this journey of self-discovery and recognize what you can do. You just make your mind up to do it. And I can't help but think how pleased and surprised God may be on those occasions when we know that we don't want to, but we decide to expand the envelope of human excellence, and we do the right thing. Now, speaking of the right thing, I want to talk about this fourth example. This fourth example, you'll have to give it a name because it's you. And I'm asking you, do you think that you've done anything lately that has surprised God? Oh, no, not me. I don't do anything that surprises God. I'm just a sinner. Well, listen, that doesn't surprise God. I've got news for you. Being a sinner doesn't surprise God, okay? So get rid of that thought. I want you to think about those things that you do that God doesn't expect you to do. He hopes you can do it. He's given you the ability to do it. He's given you His Spirit to do it. Are you doing it? Are you able to transcend those events that are so normal all around us and expand to human excellence, which is very rarely attained? And you've got that ability. I mean, listen, a woman can have a tree. I have a woman in the top of a tree for crying out loud. You say, well, boy, not me. How do you know? Well, because I'm the father. I'm not going to be up there. But okay, well, you ladies. All right. See, we'll make all sorts of excuses. I want to talk about you for just a moment. What about you? Are you capable of surprising God? I suggest you are. And I can't help but think that it brings a great pleasure to Him to recognize what we human beings can do that transcends so much that is wrong. Oh, I know about the struggle. I do. I read this little poem I want to share with you. See if you find yourself in this. It says, within my earthly temple, there's a crowd. There's ones that's humble, but there's one that's proud. There's one that's brokenhearted for his sins, and there's one that's unrepentant, he sits and grins. There's one that loves his neighbor as himself, and one that cares for naught but fame and self. From much corroding care, I should be free if I could once determine which is me. Isn't that true? If I could just once determine which is me. I believe that you are capable of determining which is which because you have the very gift of God dwelling in you. You have remarkable capabilities. We just don't put them to the test. I didn't say put God to the test. We don't sense the remarkable discoveries that are inside of us if we would just work at it and just realize God's watching and He cares. One profound example, which I intend to close with before closing Scripture, is one, I don't know quite what to make of this because I'll be honest with you, it overwhelms me. And as I read it to you or I share it with you, you're going to see lots of possibilities. But the greatest possibility I want you to see in it is yourself. Because it's a story about love. Well, we all like that. But it's more than that. It's that capacity inside of every human being to break out of what keeps us from being everything that we should be. It's that capacity within inside of each and every one of us that allows us to not only surprise ourselves, but maybe to surprise God. Because He put in you the capability. Sort of like Einstein's mind, you know. He was able to think certain things because he apparently used more of his mind. Well, what is it that we need to be using just a little bit more of? Maybe there's an example here that carries the lesson for you. This is based upon an experience, a surgical experience, shared by a gentleman by the name of Dr. Maxwell Maltz. And he is a plastic surgeon. I assume he still is. His story is shared in this fashion. He tells about a day that a woman came to see him about her husband. I want to just stop there for a moment. Before I'm through with this example, you're going to see the potential that we all have to love each other as husband and wife, maybe even as brother to brother and sister to sister. But we don't go there very often. We don't like to push the envelope. We'd rather just be content with, I'm a sinner and what can I do to please God or share, you know, surprise God. I hope you're not that way, but too many people are. I know that there are many marriages out there that are not what they ought to be. And I don't know that any of us have the perfect marriage, but some are much happier than others. Maybe you'll see in this example what makes the difference. Anyway, she came to see this plastic surgeon about her husband. She told the doctor that her husband had been injured while attempting to save his parents who were in their house that was on fire. So you have the home and the son was there and he tried to rush in and save his two parents. In the process of going through this, he couldn't get to them, and his parents were killed in the fire. And as a result of what he attempted to do, not only were they killed, but his face was horribly disfigured and burned. After that event, he gave up on life and he went into hiding. He was just ashamed. He was despondent. He didn't want to let anybody see him, not anybody. And he didn't even want his wife to see him. Well, the doctor told the woman, he said, don't worry. He says, your husband needs to know that we've made incredible advances in the sciences of the plastic surgery, and we can do some pretty fantastic things. Then she went on to explain a little bit more of the story. She said that he wouldn't let her, his wife, into his life because he just couldn't get over the fact that he had not saved his parents. And he believed that God had punished him by allowing his face to be disfigured because of his inability to save his parents. And so he didn't want to have anything to do with anyone. And then she made this remarkable, surprising request. She looked to Dr. Maltz and said, I want you to do something for me. She said, I want you to disfigure my face so I can be like him. I want you, if you will, to burn my face so I will look like my husband. If I can share his pain, she said, then maybe he will let me back into his life. I love him so much, she went on to say, I want to be with him. And if that is what it takes for me to get back into my husband's life, then that is what I want to do. Well, of course, the doctor would not agree to that. But he was deeply moved by the wife's determination. I would suggest even surprised. What do you think? I'm surprised. Wonder if God was surprised. Well, where'd that come from? I made man and woman. Boy, I didn't know they would come up with that. That's really remarkable. Willing to have her face disfigured so that she could be with her husband.
So one thing led to the other, and he, of course, could not do that. So he got permission from the wife to go and talk with the husband, who was locked up in his room, did not want to see anybody. And so he went to the man's room, and he knocked on the door, and there was absolutely no answer. But he knew he was in there. He called loudly through the door. He said to him, he says, "I know you're in there, and I know you can hear me. So I've come to tell you that I'm Dr. Maxwell. I'm a plastic surgeon, and I want you to know that I can restore your face." No response. So he cried out again loudly. He said, "Please come out and let me talk to you. Let me restore your face." No answer. Still speaking through the door, rather loudly now, Dr. Maltz told the man what his wife was asking him to do. And this is what he said. "Your wife wants me to disfigure her face, to make her face like yours, in the hope that you will let her back into your life." That's how much she loves you. That's how much she wants to help you. There was a brief moment of silence. And then ever so slowly, the doorknob began to turn. And this disfigured man came out to make a new beginning and to find a new life. He was set free, brothers and sisters. He was set free and brought out of hiding by his wife's love. I'm surprised. That caught me by surprise. I want you to notice a verse here in Hebrews chapter 2. Hebrews chapter 2, one, actually a couple little verses, 17 and 18. Hebrews chapter 2, verses 17 and 18. It says here, "Wherefore," and I couldn't help but notice the analogy, "wherefore," as you're turning there, let me give you another thought to think about, because I got to thinking about what Jesus Christ had done for me to bring me out of hiding. You answer that question. What's he done for you to bring you out of hiding? Well, was he disfigured? Well, sure he was. Was he beaten? Sure he was. Was he unrecognizable as a human being because of our sins? Sure he was. He gave everything he had to give to bring us out of hiding. He was the full manifestation of all that is love, because he wanted us to come back to him. And this is what we read in verse 17. "Wherefore, in all things it behooved him to be made like to his brothers and sisters." Let me read that one more time. "Wherefore, in all things he became disfigured just like us. He took upon himself our sins, which we bear. He was made like unto his brethren, that he might be a merciful and a faithful high priest in things pertaining to God, to make reconciliation for the sins of the people. For in that he himself has suffered being tempted, he is able to succor," or to assist, "them that are tempted." That's remarkable. That's a surprise. Except I've come to accept it. I've read it year after year after year, and we hear it from the pulpit. I don't want to ever take it for granted. What I believe can be done in each and every one of our lives is I believe that we can surprise ourselves. I believe that we can get off this sort of a "woe is me" and I'm a rotten human being kind of an approach to life, and we can begin to work on ourselves. We can begin to do some of the things that might surprise us. And they're so right, and in so doing, we're going to be remarkably surprised to find out that Jesus Christ says, "Well, isn't that something? Oh, they pulled one off on me there. Well, I knew they were capable of that, but..." Well, what do you know? It was all worth it after all. And then we can come out of our hiding and be brought back to him. Oh, it's not to be found out there. It's to be found in here. A kindergarten teacher asked her class the following question. She said, "What is the color of an apple?" All right, I'll ask all of you. What's the color of an apple? You all have one color in your mind? Well, one student said, "Green." couple of students said, "Oh, red." One student even said, "No, gold." But there was one persistent little student in the back who maybe said it best of all. She said, "No, they're white." The teacher said, "What do you mean they're white?" She said, the teacher, "Well, they're red and they're gold and they're green and all that." And the student was somewhat adamant. She was firm in her opinion. She says, "No, they are white. Just look on the inside. Just look on the inside." And I'm telling all of you, that's where Jesus looks. He's looking on the inside. And I can't help but believe he's waiting for you to surprise him. So why not do him and you a favor and go on this sense of discovery about yourself and elevate remarkable human potential. And along the way, I assure you, you can surprise yourself. And you will surprise Jesus.